This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Righto, kick it in the guts, Trev.
You're listening to Radio Hawke's Bay. I'm Ken Morrison, and this is a program called Made in New Zealand, the show where I get to spotlight creative minds shaping Aotearoa's entertainment scene. Today I'm thrilled to be joined in the studio by James J. Cleary, the writer, director and producer behind the new Kiwi film What Lies Between. And alongside James, we have the film's co-producer and one of its lead actors, Daniel Betty. Welcome to both of you.
Yeah, kia ora, Ken. Nice to see you, mate.
Great to have you here. Now, before we talk really about the film, which we're here to talk about anyway, I just wonder, James, just wind the clock back a bit. How did you get involved in the film industry?
Really quite by accident. You want the longest? Oh, I'm trying to do the short story.
Version.
Yeah. So I was a jazz drummer, and I got RSI, and I sort of got pretty frustrated, moved to Australia, and just by accident sort of bumped into a friend that said, you know, there's a few films getting made here at the moment. They just wrapped Mission Impossible, and they were shooting Moulin Rouge, and they were just looking for crew. And so I ended up working for Panavision Lighting that was supplying all the equipment into Moulin Rouge and the Matrix and stuff. So that was really my first taste. So I didn't even, at that time, I didn't even know what anyone does in a film.
Yeah.
And so I went to the Fox Studios there, walked into the main hall sort of set in the largest stage there at Fox Studios of Moulin Rouge. And I was like blown away. I just couldn't believe they built sets, and there was like 1,000 lights in the ceiling. I was just hooked straight away. And then so that sort of just spurred that sort of interest in that. And then I really got into film, and then I really just found too my passion for writing, which sort of just grew at that time too. So in my early 20s, and it sort of just came out of nowhere and quite unexpected.
Some big name drops there, Matrix and Moulin Rouge, and you said it just like you went to Pack and Save or Countdown.
It was a great experience. And another big one that really was great that I managed to intern on Star Wars. So at the time, though, I think they were shooting Star Wars, it might have been I get confused with the order. So it's maybe 2 and 3 in the order of Star Wars. So yeah, I managed to do like 6 weeks on that, so that was a great experience too. Before I actually came back to New Zealand and sort of continued on with writing and my passion for filmmaking and learning.
What about you, Daniel? I mean, star of stage and screen, where did you start in it all?
Look, I've been in it for a long time now, Ken, and to be fair, I always sort of love to tell the story because it was at Charitable High School where I started my sort of career, and the first 15 rugby team got asked to be the Cossack dancers in the school show, and the school show was Fiddler on the Roof, and we all thought it was a good bit of fun, and so we all, you know, donned off our boots and came into this environment and had a good old laugh being the Cossack dancers. But I can always remember being in that environment and realising there's something, it's like a magic that happens when you're in a theatre space.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't happen on a rugby field.
No, indeed.
And so for me it was, I suppose, a bit of an awakening. And then that's led on to, I guess, a career, a training. And then, you know, I've been working now in the industry for over 20 years.
Yes.
And just love it. I love seeing people, connecting with people in ways that makes them feel something.
I mean, people have got no idea what goes on behind the scenes. I've been involved in theatre locally since about 1970. But we go along, we see a show or watch a movie, and we have got no idea, you know, how long that took to produce. I mean, what keeps you guys both going?
Yeah. Well, I can talk into that, how long it's taken. So this story, What Lies Between, that we're currently working on. I started writing that 10 years ago.
Wow.
And it was sort of a journey to try and do in the sort of quiet times of life between having a family, a young family, and working. And then I sort of at one stage said, this isn't going to happen unless I'm, you know, quit my job and go into full time. It's just, it's too competitive. It's just too hard to, all the information and everything you need to learn. So within the last 2 years, and that's when I sort of quit my job, and then I met Dan, and it sort of took pace then. And it's been full on really in the over the last year, just in this film, working to get it made. So it's a sort of call it a 10-year journey for me, and a couple of years for Dan, as a team together.
Did you write it as a movie, or was it going to be a book or a story?
Oh no, always. The novella and writing prose is quite different from writing a screenplay, which is a very much a skeleton sort of form of writing, if anyone's ever read it. So it's it's more visual based, and you're sort of and it's got the dialogue in there, and and my style is very sort of visceral and visual and emotive, and I tend to show more than say, which is a really, you can see in this film at, that we're doing now, what lies between. It's just, it's a real experience to the emotions. You sort of have to let go of the intellectual element of stuff and just let the film wash over you with the music and the score, and it's quite empowering in that sense.
And I think what's interesting too, is to add to that, is that, you know, you sort of say what keeps us going.
Yeah.
And I think it's stories. You know, everything that we do is about the essence of a story. And so when we connected, you know, we shifted, this work has shifted probably around, I don't know, maybe 12 to 13, 14 scripts that we've rewritten throughout, you know, kind of a 2 year period. Once we get that kind of locked in script, the real essence of that story, we then start to plan how we would shoot it. And it's really about trying to be as organized as you possibly can, because every day that you add on for shooting costs money.
A lot of money, yeah.
And so we managed to shoot this work in 19 days, and 18 of it was pretty much here in Hawke's Bay, which has been absolutely amazing. And, you know, I think what really keeps me going is, one, the story, and two, the people.
Yeah.
So that's been the big thing for me.
It sounds easy, doesn't it? You write the script, let's make a movie. It's obviously not easy. I mean, I guess the biggest, not hurdle, but was getting the funding for it. How did that work out?
Yeah, funding's always the hardest part for anything, as you know, Ken. And so, you know, for us, we've managed to make this film on a low budget. And, you know, we believe that we've come out with a $1 million product, you know, with the amount of work and energy and support and resources that our film community across the country have helped us with. But to capture the money, putting it in its simplest form, you go out and you talk to people. Yeah. And so we had a number of what we call investor evenings. We spoke to a lot of businesses and or key people who we really wanted to connect with around the story. As I said, the story is the most important thing. And if you can get that across to the people that really, you know, want to see it, then it'll be made.
Yeah, I think to add on to that too, Dan, is the strategy that we came up to, because we had lots of different iterations of how we're going to do it, and a lot failed, and then sort of came up with a plan to go shoot a fake trailer. So take scenes out of the film, go shoot it. So we shot that over 4 days and assembled this trailer, because talking to people, you go with a script that's, you know, lines on a page, and it is abstract if you don't understand, like, the film language and how it translates. It's just too abstract for people to get a concept of what it's going to be like. And so we were going around doing that. It was like, oh, yeah. No, so we made this trailer, and when we had these evenings, we sort of said, oh, by the way, at the end, we said, got a surprise for you. We've got a little teaser trailer we've shot, would like to show you. So we put that on, and that just translated everything we talked about in that moment, and they could visualize it, and they could get a sense of the tone and the feel, and that's really what galvanized people to make that step and get them behind it, because they could see an outcome on the screen with sound and everything. So that was a real key part to our strategy that we sort of stumbled onto through a lot of other ways previously.
Now, you've obviously been passionate about it for more than 10 years. You read the script. At what point did you both decide, this is going to be a great movie?
last week?
No, not at all. I'm joking. Look, I think this is me with my producer's hat on. When you read a story, when you sit down and you can read the story from start to finish in one sitting, you know there's something in it. And so we went on a big journey together of talking about it. We even participated in a lot of national programs to support us around what was happening, what's current, and what's popular at the moment. And so what sort of presented itself was this change of genre within the film. And so we managed to shift the film into a psychological thriller.
Yes.
And by doing that, I think that's when the real visceral elements and the real kind of tension and internal conflicts of characters started to come to life. And for me, that was when once we'd sort of landed on that, it really started to drive home, you know, like the forest itself as a character.
Yes.
You know, and when you can, you really sort of anchor into those things as an actor, it makes it 10 times easier for you to build on.
Thriller or horror film?
No. Just to add to what Dan said, I think when I first wrote it, and this is how it's sort of grown over that period, it was more of a really abstract art house film. And I sort of got to the point where this is going to just be too hard to make, and it just might not land with an audience. It might be too abstract. So a lot of sort of cut 15 to 20 pages out of the film and just focused it into the two main characters and a couple of locations, really just to make it easy to film in one sense. But what it has done is made it a really focused film that and that translates really beautifully. So the forest that Dan's talking about was just an accident. So we're looking for a cottage where this writer goes to finish what he's writing, and it just happened that it's a cottage that borders a 400 sort of hectare forest. And going there and seeing that, I actually translated some scenes into the forest, and it became a really big part of the film as the writer ventures into the forest and gets drawn further away from the cottage and further into his sort of subconscious, into the elements of the forest. It became a real big element in the film, and then it sort of built on those psychological elements and the visceral element that's really strong in it. And one person that viewed it said, I think twice about heading into a forest again soon. It's just so powerful what's happening. But ye
18 days of filming. Was it hard to get into? I mean, as an actor, was it hard to get into your character with such a short shooting time? Or
Look, Ken, I'd started probably about a year before. So my process is quite detailed in the sense of once I establish the character, I start breaking it down. And it's probably really important because a lot of people who are going to go and see this film either know me personally or have seen me on stage or have seen me out in the community. And it's just to reiterate, that's a character that I'm portraying there up on the screen. So for me, it was really about trying to find who this character was, who Jim really was. And you'll see, I think, in the work how, for me, it came back to almost sort of stripping everything away and going, Jim kind of represents every man. And we're quite unique here in New Zealand in the way that every man, our every man, portrays himself out into the community. And so one of my big hopes really is that when people, especially male, will come in and see this work and actually watch it from start to finish, will start to consider about themselves, you know, different elements of self. So for me, I really had to dive deep into who I am and then start to think about some of the habits that this particular character has. And for me, really just immersing myself in the lifestyle of this particular person, which you'll see in the end, it's a challenging role, and it's a big role presented. So that's been a journey.
Yeah. Were the characters based on people you knew?
Sort of, and then not really. You sort of everything you sort of, with all writing, you sort of take little moments or little things that you see, and then you sort of put them in a box and shake them up. And, yeah, sort of you take little bits, and I guess that's just how a lot of writers work with their life experience and their interactions. And then it just it gets so big that it outgrows all those little nuances of characters that you've assembled them from. But, yeah, the...
So is James Jim?
That was funny, because... an inspiration is sort of The Shining, and then I Jack Nicholson, and I thought he called Jack, so I'm just going to write it as I'm James, but I'm going to call him Jim. Yeah. So that's just a little play on a sort of favourite film of mine. So that's where that comes from.
I got a very strong cast there. I mean, all well known actors: Daniel Beatty, Ruth Strong, Peter Elliott, Alicia Ward Knox. Was it hard to cast? Or did you have those people in mind?
Yeah, well, actually, I first contacted Dan because I was really just running solo at the time, and I went to see him and said, oh, I need some help casting. And he goes, yeah, I can help you with that. And sent us the script through, and so I sent it through, and then we sort of met up again, and he's like, oh, you know, I've had to think of some people, but I'd really like to, I really sort of connected with the story, and I'd really like to put myself forward to play the role of Jim. And I said, okay, and so it went from there, and Dan came on then, and I also had an existing relationship with Ruth professionally, and I've always had my eye on her, and she sort of has this really sort of magnetism and emotional that she can just rise to and just be real palpable. Mm-hmm. And I thought just perfect for the role of Jess within the film. But as we progressed, we had to break the film into stages to make it, to be able to film it. So halfway through, we only had the two leads cast, and we didn't have Leisha or Peter on. And we're sort of trying to film what we could without knowing who that was going to be, and then planning to come back and add them in. So Leisha got added a connection through Dan. And she plays her role really beautiful of Jim's wife. And then again, in the, later on, we sort of got bumped into Peter and said, oh, we've got this little cameo. It's pretty small, but you'd be the perfect guy to take this role and play as agent. So that's how it sort of just evolved and sort of fell into place as we went on with the film. But, yeah, those two sort of got added towards the end of the filming.
It's really lovely too, Ken, because Pete Elliott and I met a long, long time ago, and he taught me when I was training. And so there was an instant connection, you know, that kind of comes with that relationship. And same with Alicia. Both of us were in the same drama class together. So it was a bit like stepping back into...
school reunion almost.
Yeah. So that was a really lovely... lovely connection, and for them to both come on board, which was wicked.
I mean, it must be a tough job. Just, you know, first of all, you're writing, you're producing, directing. How do you choose the music for the movies? I mean,
that was a big process. So there's a young composer in Hawke's Bay here, Halo Siluata. Where Dan and I sort of worked with him on short films, and we were sort of looking around, and we didn't really know what the music was going to be. But I had a feeling of what it was going to be. And it was a bit of a trial and error through three really big sessions of the first two, like, really lost work. We're looking at everything, looking for sounds that really capture the emotional core of the film. And it wasn't until the third session that we really sort of found the tone and how we were going to do it. Mm. And then through that, Halo sort of went away and worked on some pieces and came back, and that's what we're looking for, and that sort of just grew from there, in a process of looking at each scene and just breaking down. There's about 23 individual music sequences. So at the start we just had to choose, well, let's focus on this one and let's get that right, and then from that base that we established, they sort of grew out of that and would come and track lay each scene and get it in. And while we're doing that, we're changing it and creating music as we're track laying, because that moment doesn't feel quite right there. We should pull that back because it's doing it at the wrong time. So it was going away and doing it by himself, coming into the session to track lay it and put it into the sound mix, and we were tweaking it and writing music and bringing it in to the track as we were, because it changes once you lay the music in, because you only got guide track, all the pacing and the tone changes. So it's a bit of a dance and a nuance to do it improvisationally like that, to lay it in and just keep developing and growing it. And then it just, you just get a sense that it settles in and it feels right.
Yeah.
I think it's also kind of worth saying too that the music in this piece sets up the thriller elements. Mm. So what it does is it actually builds the tension, a little bit like a Hitchcock movie.
Yes.
So it drives you towards the next moment, which is really beautiful. And Halo, being an Indigenous artist, you know, very early on in the process, we talked a lot about the use of taonga pōro and how actually the different types of taonga pōro can lead towards those kind of moments. So when you see the film, you'll actually get a real sense of the natural kind of elements that that he's drawn on for the development of his composition. And to me, it kind of it links everything, which is really amazing. And look, we have to give a shout out to Halo because he is only 19 years old, and he's a superstar, and we can't wait to sort of, you know, get this work out there for him and start to have, you know, sort of watch his career fly from here, because I think that's what's gonna take off.
They've both been involved in the industry for decades, might as well say. And I wonder, how does this experience of this movie, where does that rank for you, James? Is it the pinnacle?
Well, the pinnacle at the moment, I guess. Yes. being my first feature film, and it's always been, you know, since I was in Sydney in those early days, it's always been my sort of motivation. And I've talked to people who are doing something completely different and they're struggling along in their own business and what they're doing. I said, well, it's been like that for me. And you just don't know where you are at in your timeline. Are you at the 10% more? Are you nearly there? Or are you at only 50%? You never know. But something within me just kept driving and driving and driving. I had to tell these stories, and that's driven me along. But yeah, I had another film they wanted to make before this one, but it was just too complicated, and I thought, no, I'm not going to be able to do the justice of it. So I've got lots of stories, but this one sort of came as a really nice story that, not complicated, but it has really surprised me, because you never really know what you're going to get until you've done it.
Yeah.
So you sort of tell the story a few times through the production, writing it when you go film it, and then in the edit. And so you get a few goes at it, and it really sort of shaped and shifted in the edit and in the post-production with the sound. And it's sort of, like you write it and you think, oh, that's sort of pacey and that's interesting. But then you go shoot and go, well, that's actually pretty good. But then you bring the music and you go, well, that totally surpassed what I was thinking. And then even in the edit, you're sort of coming up with the concepts and ideas and nuances in the scene that you didn't quite see early on. And that's what's beautiful about the process, is it just grows and grows as people come on it, and that's what I really enjoy. It just keeps shifting, and it's just settled into this really beautiful film that I'm quite proud of for what we've achieved with what we've had.
What about you, Daniel?
It's awesome, you know, to get to this particular point. There's not very many people here that have the opportunity to make a feature film and or to be in a feature film. And so, you know, it was, I think what we've really tried to work hard on is that everything that we have done, we have tried to always exceed expectations of ourselves. And so from our posters to our marketing material to the trailer to everything that's out there in the public eye at the moment, we've really worked hard to set that, you know, kind of high standard. So for me, I think it's the start, you know, of future things in Hawke's Bay, and hopefully future things, future productions to come through as well.
As a punter who goes along to see it when I leave the theatre, how am I going to feel?
Well, that's we were talking about this before that. You can go to a lot of films and they can be quite traumatic, and then the sort of just leaves you, and the ending's like doesn't round off, or it stopped there. Like, yes. Nothing was resolved, and for me, as a filmmaker, I think the ending's the most important part. Like, you can have a great start and a middle and stuff, but it's really told in the ending when you leave, and what's resolved what isn't resolved. And I always had this idea for the ending, and actually through test screenings we changed it again because people didn't feel like it quite landed how they want. It was a little bit too open, but it's a film that you get a beautiful resolution at the end, and you get a let out.
Yes.
So it revolves a bit, but it also opens up a great avenue of questioning and go, why there's elements earlier in the film, I sort of understand them now, but I've had a person come up to me who saw a test screening, and she sort of grabbed me and said, I was in bed with my husband and I woke up and I woke him up and I said, I know that point. It's one of those films that all the layers that are buried into it sort of wash over you, and people talk about how it sort of stays with you days after, and it really does, you know, invade you in a really beautiful way, and the story comes through and those themes just really ride through and leaves you, you know, in a good place for what you've experienced, because it is a psychological thriller. There's a lot of tension in it, and that's the genre, but I think it really, for me, like watching it, I really like, here comes the ending, and it just has that bit and the music, and it's all in the ending and what's said in that little nuance of that moment.
And the big release is just around the corner.
It is, yeah. Coming up this week.
Yep, 6th of November.
Absolutely. So make sure that, I think the big thing for us is that we really want people to come and see it in the cinema. And, you know, anyone who knows me, I often promote the fact that if you want to see theatre, you go to the theatre. If you want to see films, you go to the cinema. If you want to experience the magic of what someone has created, you need to see it in those environments. And this is a film to be seen in the cinema. It complements with the 5:1 sound, complements with the beautiful cinematography that's been sort of created throughout. So we want to bring people back together. You know, rather than being in our living rooms and, you know, watching it by ourselves, there's a magic that happens when there is, you know, a group of people together experiencing something. And the questions that get left at the end, you all get to explore together. So that's definitely something for us to that we're looking forward to this week.
It'll be marvellous, and I suppose that's a wrap. But where to from here? I mean, how do you come down from that and start again? You know? Or was it just another day at the office?
We're just really at the beginning, I think. This is the hard time now that people don't understand with the film. Like, it's hard to get it made, but it's hard to get it seen.
Yes.
And when you're up against the big guys and you don't have the money and the budget for marketing and the really big names, it's just really trying to get your story out there, engaging with the public and just seeing, look, it doesn't have all those things, but it has a beautiful story in it, and it's been made to be enjoyed in that environment, and it's,
And I think, you know, this will be the next 12 months, Ken. We'll be in probably about 50 festivals all around the world. These screenings over this next month in Hawke's Bay is kind of our start. We've got screenings in Auckland. We've just been asked to have screenings in Christchurch as well, and will continue the word starts to spread around the country. This is just the end of one project. There's more to come. So, you know, as a producer, I've probably got about 10 films on my books that I'm currently working with. It's a starting point to take Hawke's Bay on the map as a filming destination.
If you've got a walk on for an old guy with long white hair, let me know.
Absolutely.
My pleasure to talk to you both, and we hope the film goes well for you.
Hey, thanks, Ken. Really appreciate it.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.